Hi, Jason. This is John.
Mr. Cleese, so awesome to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
I want to know about your name. I like this last name of yours, Fraley. What's that about?
Yeah, you like that? I believe it's German. Yeah. It's a little, I know I'm part German and Irish, but I think the name's German. A little bit of Cherokee in me, but mostly German and Irish.
Oh, I had a Cherokee, partly Cherokee wife once.
Really?
How interesting. So we're sort of related.
Yeah, but you're much funnier.
Well, we'll see. Well, the audience will make up its mind about that.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, just so everyone knows, we're here to talk about John Cleese is coming to DC's Warner Theater on Thursday, November 9th. It's going to be an awesome event. You guys are screening Monty Python and the Holy Grail, 1975 comedy classic in its entirety. And then you're going to follow it up with a Q&A.
Yeah, we show the movie, and then I come up and explain to the audience why it's not as good as they think it is. And then they ask me lots and lots of questions, which are very nice, and some of them are extremely rude and intrusive and vastly entertaining. Some of them are extremely silly. One person said to me, they sent the questions up on a card, and one of the cards said, if you could turn one of the other Monty Pythons into a dessert, what would it be?
What did you say? And who did
Oh, I said idle sorbet, which wasn't very good, but I didn't have any time to think about it. You know? One person asked me, if you could be a component part of an aircraft, what component part would you choose to be? Yeah, I said the joystick to that one. But it's a very happy event because I've got to tell you, this sounds like show business bullshit, but it's absolutely true. I do have the nicest fans in the world because, first of all, they've got a nice sense of humor and they really know how to laugh. None of that polite smiling. And the other thing is they're silly. Some of them come dressed as Python characters, but it's a terribly happy event. You suddenly sit there with 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 people, and they're all having a good time. And you look out there and you think, actually, the world isn't too bad a place some of the time. You know, because I think you need a little bit of communal feeling and laughter right at the moment.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly right. There's a lot going on in the world, so it's going to be nice to sit back and just laugh at your movie. But I thought, interesting what you just said there, how you said it's not as, you're going to tell them how the movie's not as good as everyone thinks. Because to me, it's got to be up there with the funniest movies of all time. I mean, I don't know what else I'd put up there.
Well, I know, Blazing Saddles. I mean, that. Well, I just think the first 50 minutes of it is wonderful, but then I don't like the ending. In fact, I've re-edited the ending, and I will show the audience my version of the ending. So that's sort of world first.
Ooh.
But I re-edited it about 10 days ago on the coach with the guy who makes sure the film's projected properly and does all the IT for the show. And we've recut it two or three times to make it rather less boring, frankly.
So yeah, what didn't you like about the end? The rabbit or what?
It's too slow.
Yeah,
it was old Terry Gilliam showing us how he could direct adult movies. You know, lots of shots with lots of smoke in, which makes the shots look good.
Right.
God knows where the smoke's come from, and lots of wonderful, stunning visuals that aren't the slightest bit funny. So you see, I would have edited it very differently. But that was the thing about the Pythons. We always accepted that there was very little that we could agree on, except the need for good food and wine.
Right, right. All right. So you think the end is a little too much Brazil and not enough flying circus. All right.
Know about Brazil. It's too full of stunning images.
Right.
Which is not what the movie's about. In fact, the tour manager said to me a couple of weeks ago when we were watching it backstage, we stand behind the screen so we see a sort of mirror version of it. He said it's as though 7 minutes has been cut into Holy Grail from a completely different kind of movie. And that's exactly how I saw it. I thought that was very well put.
Oh, well, we can't wait to see your new and improved director's re-edited cut here.
the audiences say they like it better.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're just being polite, but actually I think they do because they suddenly realize how much of that ending isn't really funny.
Right, there you go. Well, up until that point, it's funny as hell, man. I mean, obviously, we'll remind our listeners, in case they haven't seen it in a while, you played Sir Lancelot the Brave, but also tons of other little, you know, supporting characters.
Well, I play the guy whose arms and legs get chopped off. I always enjoyed that.
The Black Knight. How did you come up with "it's only a flesh wound"?
I don't know. I told Graham a story that I'd been told when I was 15 about a wrestling match in Rome where people had, the two wrestlers had got so intertwined there was a loud crack, and one guy's arm had broken, and the referee broke it up and sent him off to get his arm set, and said to the other guy he won, and the other guy was dead. And that struck me as being terribly funny. I think to have gone through that and won, and never to know that you'd won would be very disappointing. The teacher tried to say that, tried to tell us that it meant that if you didn't give up, you couldn't be beaten.
Ah.
So if you think about it, that's what gave us the idea for the Black Knight.
And talk about how that scene, the importance of how it sort of ramps up, how you lose one limb at a time. I mean, if you just lost them all immediately, it wouldn't be as funny. But I love how you just keep adding and keep losing limbs, and it's by the end you're just hopping on one leg. I'm dying, cracking up just thinking about it.
But, yeah, a guy who only had one leg, a monopod, who was a silversmith in the city of London, and his name, I always like this, was Richard Burton. He took over from me and put my armor on after I'd lost one of my legs. But what's so funny about it is that people laugh at seeing the guy having his arms and legs chopped off. And it is, of course, because he shows he's not even disappointed. You see, let alone showing that it hurts. And if he did indicate for a moment that he was hurt, then the audience would stop laughing. But when he doesn't, then it's like watching Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
He just keeps on coming. It doesn't matter what he loses. He keeps coming. And you also, of course, you play the man bringing out your dad. do you remember which one of you guys came up with, when you were sitting writing the script, which one of you came up with the guy
over
your shoulder?
Well, Graham and I wrote that.
Yeah.
I know I wrote it with Graham, but when you write something with someone, you never remember afterwards which one of you said what.
Yeah.
But that's wonderfully cruel. It's extraordinary. I want to laugh at something so cruel, but again, it's like a cartoon, you know. I bring the guy out, and he says, "I'm not dead yet."
I feel happy.
I can't remember. Yes, that's right. And I'd say something like, "Shut up, you'll be dead soon." And he says, "No, but I'm not dead yet." It's wonderfully cruel, but that's why we can laugh at it so much, because nobody's really upset.
I'm sensing a theme here. You know, as the Black Knight, he just loses limbs, keeps coming. Even the dead guy keeps coming. He's happy.
Well, there's a lot of very black humor in it, but it's silly humor, and you know, nobody takes it any more seriously than they would Tom and Jerry.
Absolutely. And all right, one more supporting character from the role from the movie that you played, the witch hunting villager. When she turned me into a newt, but you got better. Talk about the importance of the pause in between the newt and the "I got better." I think it's all in the pause that makes it funny.
You're quite right, because when he says she turned me into a newt, there's a pause while everyone around him looks at him and registers the fact that he is definitely not a newt at that moment. So then he has to modify his excuse. You're quite right. It's the pause that's funny.
So when the person in the Q&A in the audience asked if you could turn someone into a dessert, you turn them into dessert, but they got better.
Very good.
There you go.
Very
All right.
Good.
No,
I hadn't thought of that.
It's such a. Well, there you go. There's your response. If anyone asks that again, but it's to me the funniest thing is the sight gag. The visual of the clanking of the coconuts as the galloping horses. Do you remember how you guys came up with that one?
Well, that was Michael Palin, I think. Terry Jones may have had a hand in it, but it was basically Michael's stuff. And when we were writing the script to begin with, we had no idea what we were doing, and we certainly had no idea what the film was going to be about. In fact, we threw away, you might not believe this, but it's true, we threw away 90% of the first draft.
Wow.
It just wasn't any good. I mean, it was funny, but it didn't hang together in any way. So when we then focused on Michael's piece with the coconuts, we suddenly thought, this is what the movie's about. This is it. We just got a sense that we should be writing it in that period, because in the first draft, there was a lot of stuff from modern day. So once we decided to do it, make it medieval, we were away. And of course, it's very lucky in retrospect because, of course, because it's historical, it never dates.
Absolutely. And you were talking about how you know...
I'm sorry, we're actually out of time.
Okay, we'll wrap it up. All right, Mr. Cleese, I guess just in closing, why should we come out here and see this show?
I can think of no good reason at all.
Perfect way to leave it. Hey, thank you so much, man. Hilarious as always.
Okay, bye.